Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Maxwell, here to welcome you to Michael's Saturday Surprise for Saturday, October the 21st, 2017. We're going to hear an hour and a half of horror and excitement. Both of our shows are going to come from the Screen Director's Playhouse, so sit back and enjoy the programs. Here's our first show. It's called The Night Has a Thousand Eyes, and it's from the Screen Director's Playhouse, aired on February the 27th, 1949.
From Hollywood, the NBC Theater presents...
Screen Director's Guild Assignment, production Night Has a Thousand Eyes, director John Farrell, star Edward G. Robinson.
The NBC Theater presents the Screen Directors Guild production of A Chronicle of Fear, Paramount's Night Has a Thousand Eyes, with its original team of screen director John Farrell, screen star Edward G. Robinson, and William Demarest. Although technical and artistic skills are the everyday instruments of the motion picture director, the very heart of his craft is fashioned from another sort of knowledge, the knowledge of the world in which he lives, and that can be gained only by living a life rich in experience. Such is the background of tonight's guest on the NBC Theater. A native Australian, he has been a seaman, soldier of fortune, adventurer at large, and has made an enduring mark as a scholarly writer of fiction and nonfiction. Here, then, is the director of many famous Paramount films, such as Wake Island, 2 Years Before the Mast, The Big Clock, the soon-to-be-released Alias Nick Beale, and tonight's story, Night Has a Thousand Eyes. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. John Farrell.
Night Has a Thousand Eyes is a story of the supernatural, but it is not a flight of fancy. Counterparts of the strange phenomena in tonight's story have been the subject of recent scientific study by some of our universities. Thus, through the medium of film, and now through the radio, we attempt to reveal a bizarre and a rather terrifying aspect of the strange, strange world in which we live. Now, for the first time on the air, here is Night Has a Thousand Eyes, starring Edward G. Robinson as John Triton, with William Demarest as Lieutenant Sean.
In the drawing room of a fine suburban home, a young man named Carson reads a strange manuscript, while the company listens gravely and silently.
My dear Carson, as you read this manuscript, I will be dead. No one is to blame. My death was as certain as all the other strange events I foresaw. Some of you who have seen me die will doubt the story
and dismiss it as a series of contrived events and coincidences. But you, Carson, and some of the others will know that there are things on Earth still hidden from us, still secret and unfathomable. I suppose most men can look back and see the exact point where destiny touched them. My destiny came upon me on the night of August 3rd, 1929. I was billed as Triton, the mental wizard. Like most mind-reading acts, it was a phony, but a first-class phony. Jenny, my lovely fiancée, had collected all the questions from the audience, and my good friend Whitney Cortland was ready for his part at the piano. Now, ladies and gentlemen, from where I stand, I shall endeavor to read the questions which you have written and which are now unopened, mind you, in that glass bowl. Now, if I may have a little quiet music, Mr. Cortland. Let me see. I sense a name. A lady's name. Byers. Clara Byers. Miss Byers asked a question. She wishes to know. Something's wrong. There are disruptive impulses coming from the audience. A woman in a white dress, a little boy. Madam, you there in the third row. Your little boy is in great danger. You must go home at once. At once! Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll continue where we left off. If I may have some quiet music, Mr. Cortland. The incident disturbed me. But then I forgot about it entirely until late that night when the telephone rang in my room. It was the woman calling to tell me that she had come home to find the boy's room in flames. She had arrived just in time to save the child's life. And I was worried, deeply worried, although not yet frightened. There were other incidents, one of them brought on by Courtney's usual concern about our economic situation.
Well, kids, it's the same old story. Broke again. We could stand a little ready cash. Matter of fact, I'm going to put our last 10 spot on ready cash in the fifth at Green Meadows.
Ready cash? No, not ready cash. He'll fall and have to be destroyed. Peer Gynt. Peer Gynt by two lengths. Ready cash fell and had to be destroyed. Peer Gynt won by two lengths. It occurred to me that we might make fortunes this way. I didn't want to. It scared me. I began having a crazy feeling that by telling them, I was making the things come true. I began to wonder, would anything have happened if I'd kept quiet? And then one dismal rainy day, I had my chance to find out. I was coming out of the theater. A little boy recognized me and asked me for an autograph. And then he turned to skip away. Wait, son! I'd had a vision of a car skidding on the slick pavement. A wild cry. And then I thought, no, perhaps if I keep it to myself, it won't happen. Nothing, son. Just run along now. Run along. He went. A moment later. It was no use. After the boy's death, I knew I could foresee these events, but I was powerless to prevent their coming true.
Look, Johnny, I just met a big oil man down in the lobby who wants us to come in on this Comanche Hills oil field.
Well, so what?
Well, do you suppose you could get a hunch on a sporting proposition like that? Might make us a lot of money.
No, it's no good, Court. We're washed up on hunches.
Why, Johnny?
Well, because I'm scared, Jenny, plain scared.
I haven't had a very good feeling about it myself, Johnny.
Well, all right. We'd better get down to the theater then and earn it the hard way. Curtain in 20 minutes.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, if you will all please concentrate on the sealed questions you have addressed to me, please. A little quiet music, Mr. Cortland. I'm concentrating on a particular envelope. Young lady's handwriting. She, the young lady. The lady, I looked at Jenny. Stared at Jenny, so beautiful, so fragile and desirable and so much to me. I saw her and something else.
Johnny.
Ring down the curtain.
Johnny, what's the matter?
Ring down the curtain, I tell you. Ring down the curtain!
Are you sure you feel better now, Johnny?
Oh, sure, Jenny. I just felt a little dizzy out there.
You sure had us worried there for a while.
Oh, Court.
Yeah?
Had a sort of a minor hunch about that Comanche Hills oil proposition.
Be one of the richest oil pools in the country. Makes us all rich.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you, Johnny. Now let's go out and eat.
You and Jenny go ahead. I'll join you later. Maybe it was the wrong decision, but I went away. What I'd seen that night on the stage had been Jenny's death. If I stayed, we'd be married and there'd be a child. The child would live, but Jenny wouldn't. I had to go away to save Jenny's life and save my own sanity. I knew Cortland would take care of Jenny and Comanche Hills Oil would take care of both of them. Yes, but I knew I had to get away from people, especially the people I loved. I went away. It didn't work. A year later, I heard that Jenny had married Cortland. She died, and her daughter Jean was born. I read about it in Variety. For 20 years, I lived almost a hermit's life and had no more visions. This gift or the curse seemed to wither it from disuse. And then after 20 years, on the night of Jean's debut, I stood outside in the crowd and I watched her go inside the fine hotel, holding tight to Court's arm. Jenny's daughter was lovely, and I was proud. I watched them disappear inside, and after 20 years of peace, it happened. For a moment, I saw the image of wreckage, the smoking wreckage of an airplane, and then it was gone. What did it mean this time? But nothing happened. And I forgot about it completely for 3 months. And one day in my shop, I turned on a small radio I just repaired.
Now the 11:55 news brought by your Comanche Oil reporter. New York, flying his converted army bomber, Whitney Cortland, multimillionaire president of Comanche Oil, took off from LaGuardia Airport early today in an attempt to smash the East-West transcontinental record. He and his pilot, former army flyer Richard Sims...
No! I must warn Jean. Miss Cortland, I'm sorry to force my way in here, but I have an extremely important message for your father.
I'm sorry, but my father isn't here now.
See here, old man, I'm Miss Cortland's fiancé. Miss Cortland...
No, you've got to reach your father when he lands in Wichita to refuel.
But why?
You must halt the flight.
Halt the flight?
That's absurd.
Why should Father give up his flight?
But if he doesn't, this plane will crash.
How do you know that?
Oh, Miss Cortland, please. You're wasting priceless time.
All right, I'll call. But I'll ask you a lot of questions afterwards. I want to talk to Wichita, Kansas Airport. I haven't the number.
You make a practice of predicting plane crashes?
No.
I'll wait, thank you.
Maybe just the planes of very rich men.
Oh, please.
Perhaps you're betting that he doesn't beat the record.
Hello? Hello, this is Whitney Cortland's daughter. When my father lands, have him call me immediately, will you? What? Oh, no. Oh, no!
The radio had it a few minutes later. In an hour, the extras were on the street. The Comanche Angel had crashed in Kansas. Both men were dead.
You've been very kind helping me over these past few days, Mr. Triton. I'm so grateful.
Your father was my best friend.
But if you'd only warned us sooner, if you'd only known sooner...
I don't think it would have made any difference.
Mr. Triton... What's wrong?
You have a new maid.
Well, yes, why?
You have an emerald bracelet.
Yes.
Get rid of the maid before the bracelet. before.
What? Please, tell me.
Jean, it doesn't matter now.
Why doesn't it matter? You mean, not to me? You mean, I won't need the bracelet? You mean I'm going to die too? Tell me!
Yes.
When?
Soon?
When?
Before the end of the week. At night. Under the stars. Jean.
The NBC Theater is presenting the Screen Directors Guild production of Night Has a Thousand Eyes, starring Edward G. Robinson with William Demarest, and introducing the director of the film, John Farrow.
You remember, Carson. You went to the police. They told you, yes, there had been a John Triton mental wizard who pretended to be able to predict things back in the 20s. They sent a certain detective, Lieutenant Sean, to investigate me where I was staying in Jean's house. My first interview with Sean in my little room under the eaves, far from reassure the good lieutenant, for even as I answered his bitter questions, the veil lifted again. And I saw.
Hey, Triton, come out of it. Hey.
I see a flower.
Ah, drop it, Triton. Cut.
A flower, crushed and broken. I hear a sudden wind shaking the windows. I hear a voice saying, there's no danger now. And I see her.
Who?
Jean, lying under the stars. And beside her, the paws and talons of a lion.
A lion?
Under the stars.
Did you find out what time this happens to Miss Cortland?
Tonight, as the clock strikes 11. Lieutenant Sean was all for arresting me at once. The rest of you were tolerantly skeptical, which saved me for a while. Downstairs with Jean and you, Carson, were two gentlemen and Mr. Gilman.
Mr. Gilman, president of Mid-Tide Oil.
Good evening, Mr. Triton.
And a Mr. Myers, attorney for Cortland's estate.
How do you do, Mr. Triton?
Together, we sat down for the next 2 hours. Our lives were geared to the relentless machinery of the grandfather's clock that ticked away near the curtained archway.
Frankly, I think this is ridiculous. Sitting around like this when we should be looking for a packet of missing options?
I'm sure I'll find them, Mr. Myers.
They'll be worthless in 36 hours.
Jean, are you sure you can't remember where your father put those options?
Please, Mr. Gilman, I'm much too upset.
Well, the mid-tide merger can't go through without them.
I suggest Jean be permitted to forget about big business while we all concentrate
on the clock, Mr. Carson.
Shut up, Triton.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
One down.
And one more hour to go.
And so far nothing has materialized in your weird chain of events. A crushed flower indeed, a lion, a sudden wind.
Anyone interested in the 10 o'clock news? Here. Personally, I'm interested in the 11 o'clock
which
news.
Which was upset in a collision tonight at Wilshire and Sepulveda. The lion escaped.
Turn that off.
Lion?
Lock the doors. Lock the windows. Put out some light.
I'll lock up. I'll go through the whole house.
Thanks, Gilman.
Well, there's the lion. We haven't heard a wind or seen a crushed flower or heard anyone say...
Don't say it.
sorry.
Hey, those carnations in that vase. Get them out.
Carnations?
Get them out. I don't believe any of this, but I'm taking no chance.
I'll just let me take it.
Careful now. Stand back. Don't anybody move. Not a one crushed.
That was a close one.
Mr. Myers, there's something sticking out under your foot.
Something,
Lord.
A carnation. Crushed and broken.
That does it, Triton.
No, not quite. Nothing final can happen until 11 o'clock.
And it ain't going to happen because you're around. I'm taking you downtown until after 11.
All right, Lieutenant, but it won't do any good. I'll be back at 11.
Stand still, Triton. Relax.
Yes, but I tell you, Sean, if you let me return to Jean's house, there's a chance I can use this power of mine to save her.
You put on a good show, Triton. Only I ain't buying.
Now, listen. You've a man in the cell here. His name is Amos Block. I see him in his cell now, a suicide.
You don't say. Well, there's one I can check on. Hello. Quinn? Sean. How's Block doing? Thanks. In his cell playing solitaire.
Well, nevertheless, I see him in it.
Now I'm going to leave you with the boys here and go back to Miss Cortland's. Be good, huh?
Minutes too, Jane.
Yes.
Yeah, everything is under control. It's a very copacetic.
Oh, dear.
Close that French window. Close it.
I'll close it, Lieutenant.
I thought Gilman took care of that.
Where is Gilman, by the way?
There. That does it all right.
Sudden wind.
Yeah. I'll get it. Yeah? Oh, yeah, Quinn. No. Amos Block hung himself in his cell, but he can't do that. That's suicide. Hey, look, I want Triton here before it strikes 11. I don't care how, but get him here. What time is it?
10:47.
Oh, Lord, you made the night too long.
Just one more minute to go, darling.
45 seconds.
Oh, Mr. Myers.
Well, folks, you can forget the lion. They just killed it over at Veteran Hospital.
Oh, thank goodness.
This is it. 11 o'clock.
Elliot.
Yeah?
Back to back with me. Miss Cortland, get between us. Don't anybody move. I'll shoot the man who does. That's it, folks.
It's all over. Nothing's happened.
Oh, Elliot. Elliot, darling.
It's all history now, dear. Forget it.
Elliot.
Hmm?
I'm going outside.
I'll go with you.
No. I want to get used to standing out under the stars again. Alone. And not being afraid. Thank you, dear. Thank you so much, all of you.
I'll say this for Triton. He sure called his shots, except that voice saying, there's no danger now.
You just said it.
Yeah, but it's too late now to mean anything. Ain't it?
Sean,
Come in, Professor. Come in.
Where is she? Where's Miss Cortland?
Outside.
You let her go outside?
It's after 11.
No, it's not.
Look at the clock.
That clock is wrong.
It was right.
Well, then it's been tampered with. I've got to go to her.
Stop, Triton. Haul her out. Shoot.
It's too late for that. After him. He mustn't get near Jean.
Eight, nine, ten, 11.
That's right, 11 o'clock, Miss Cortland.
Oh, Mr. Gilman.
Your troubles are over now. No danger now.
11 o'clock, and a voice saying, there's no danger. He must have met you.
Oh, no, you don't.
No, please.
Gilman. Let go of her! Let go of her, you fool!
Hey, Sean!
Right! Get him!
Clubbed him, but good.
Jean, are you all right?
Oh, Elliot.
It's all right, Jean. You're safe now. Triton's dead.
Triton? Dead? But it was Gilman who tried to kill me.
Gilman, he didn't want those options found. But I didn't think he'd resort to murder.
Oh, poor Mr. Gilman. He died to save me.
But are you all right?
My throat hurts. Elliot, look. Mr. Triton. He's resting against the foot of that marble lion.
Marble lion. Of course. And that, Carson, ends this dark diary. I foresaw everything, even my own death. And tonight at headquarters, I finished this diary. I left it in my pocket for you to find. Only time and the expanding wisdom of mankind will confirm the story in years to come. For there are reaches of the mind still undreamed of, and there are many mysteries of time and space and spirit to be shown to us. The stars look down. The night has 1,000 eyes to search the soul of man and see if he is equal to his fathomless tomorrows, where there are yet more things in heaven and earth than are dreamed of in our philosophy.
In a moment, we'll return with our stars. Next week, the NBC Theater brings you another first in radio, a full-hour production of director Billy Wilder's great Paramount film comedy, A Foreign Affair. And starring in this hour-long drama will be Rosalind Russell, Marlena Dietrich, and John Lund. And now, here again are tonight's stars, Edward G. Robinson and William Demarest, and screen director John Farrell.
John, it's been great fun for Bill and me, slipping back into character for our parts, Night Has 1,000 Eyes.
Well, I just hope Bill here doesn't start having one of his visions again.
What, you mean cool, solid Bill Demarest is in tune with the supernatural?
He thought he was.
Now, wait a minute. I know what you're talking about, and I really did have a vision.
Yeah?
I was standing talking to Johnny on the set, and suddenly I knew one of the camera booms was swinging around behind us.
What happened?
He yelled, "Johnny, fall on your face."
Well, did you get hurt?
My nose was almost broken.
By the camera boom?
No, by falling on my face. There wasn't a camera within 50 yards.
Well, I had a vision.
Well, we don't have to be visionaries, John, to know that your direction inspired Bill and myself and everyone else connected with the picture. You did a great job.
Check, Eddie. That goes for me, too.
Thanks very much. But suddenly I seem to be getting a vision myself.
What do you see?
I see us being cut off the air if we don't say goodnight. Good night, everyone.
Good night, folks.
And good night to you, Edward G. Robinson, William Demarest, and John Farrell. Night Has 1,000 Eyes was adapted by Milton Geiger from an original story by Cornell Walrich. Music was by Henry Russell. Production was supervised by Howard Wiley. Associate producer Bill Carr. Your announcer has been Frank Barton. Night Has a Thousand Eyes was presented through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, currently releasing My One True Love, starring Phyllis Calvert, Melvin Douglas, and Wanda Hendricks. Edward G. Robinson is currently making the 20th Century Fox production, The House of Strangers. William Demarest may be seen in Paramount's Technicolor production, Whispering Smith. Listen again next week for the NBC Theater's full-hour presentation of...
Screen Directors Guild Assignment, production of Foreign Affair, director Billy Wilder, stars Rosalind Russell, Marlena Dietrich, John Lund.
The Screen Directors Guild program came to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
Well, folks, that was The Screen Directors Playhouse and The Night Has a Thousand Eyes, aired on February the 27th, 1949. Now it's time for our final show, which will be for the next hour. So grab a couple of extra drinks and snacks for this one. Here's another Screen Directors Playhouse, entitled Shadow of a Doubt. It was aired on November the 9th, 1950.
Screen Directors Playhouse, stars Cary Grant, Betsy Drake, production Shadow of a Doubt, director Alfred Hitchcock.
This is the Screen Directors Playhouse, the Thursday night feature on NBC's five-show festival of comedy, music, mystery, and drama. Brought to you five nights a week by RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, first in television, and by the makers of Anacin for fast relief from pain of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia. Ladies and gentlemen, on this first hour-long program of a new Screen Directors Playhouse series, we once again applaud the art and artistry of the screen director, in this case, Mr. Alfred Hitchcock. In many excellent creations for the screen, he has earned the title of Master of Suspense. May we again prove his mastery tonight as we present our adaptation of Mr. Hitchcock's Shadow of a Doubt, starring Cary Grant as Uncle Charlie and Betsy Drake as Charlie.
Somebody hear me. I'm suffocating. Oh, please, please. Mother, father, in the garage. Uncle Charlie. Oh, please help me, somebody.
I'm in my own garage, in my own home in Santa Rosa. And I think perhaps I'm going to die.
Please.
The blue poison gas is coming out
Mother.
Of the exhaust of the automobile. The doors of
the
car are locked, and
help
I can't
me.
Turn the motor off.
Help me, please.
And the doors of the garage are jammed shut.
Uncle Charlie!
And I think...
Uncle Charlie, let me out!
I'm going to die.
Hickory, dickory, dock.
The mouse ran up the clock.
The clock struck one.
And down he ran.
Oh, Charlie, that's not right.
Yes, it is.
Well, it's down he run.
Oh, and down he run.
Hickory, dickory, dock.
Uncle Charlie, I'm glad you're my uncle.
Are you, Charlie? Are you? Hickory, dickory. Hickory, dickory. Hickory, dickory.
When I was a little girl, we talked like that. Uncle Charlie and I. Uncle Charlie. I'm his namesake, Charlotte. Charlie. I think I loved him more than anyone. Now I'm in here and I'll die here. And he's outside, and he's smiling and handsome. Just like when he came to visit us, just a little while ago. Uncle Charlie. Pops, I'm so excited.
So is your mother, Charlie.
You'd think I was waiting for my fiancé or something. Anne?
Yeah?
Don't you think it's time to stop reading that book?
No.
But he's almost here.
That's all right. I've got my reading schedule. Uncle Charlie will understand.
He'll understand you're a spoiled brat.
Ha ha. Mother says he was spoiled himself. Mother says he was the youngest, like me.
Look, Pops, the train stopped. There he is. Uncle Charlie!
Well, Charlie! My, you're a beauty.
Charles.
But Joe, how are you? Where's Emmy?
Fixing dinner, but Anne's here.
Hi, Uncle Charlie.
Oh, hi. I bet you don't even remember me.
Sort of. Do you read much?
I used to.
I read on a schedule. 2 books a week.
Uncle Charlie, are you all right?
Certainly. Fit as a fiddle, that's me.
Oh, well, when you got off the train, the way the porter helped you, I thought you might be sick or something.
Do I look sick?
You look wonderful.
Well, let's go. Emmy's waiting.
Here, I'll take this bag. Just follow
Anne and me to the car.
I'll take this bag.
No, you don't. That's the heaviest.
That's why I want to carry it for you. You know what you are, Uncle Charlie.
What am I, Charlie?
A miracle.
Me? Whose miracle?
Mine. The way you came to visit us. It's as if you knew how much I needed you.
Perhaps I needed you too, Charlie.
The day we got your wire, I was thinking what a rut our family was in.
Ah, but Charlie, it's good to have a family again. You don't know how good.
It's good to have an uncle again. Uncle Charlie.
Charles, this will be your room.
Oh, that bag was kind of heavy.
Emmy? It looks wonderful.
My baby brother, rich and handsome.
That's my uncle.
Oh, quiet, you. Now, I'd better get settled here.
Oh, Charles, don't put your hat on the bed.
Oh, I'm superstitious?
No, but, well, there's no use inviting trouble, is there?
There's no trouble here. Nothing can touch me here in Santa Rosa.
Why, what an odd thing to say.
Is it, Charlie? It's a very odd world outside. Not sweet and fine like here. You don't know how lucky you are.
Charles, it's beautiful. I just opened the package.
What package, dear?
A wristwatch. Oh. Charles brought me a wristwatch.
Well, I'm glad you like that. Just a few presents, Anne. There's one for you downstairs, and one for Anne, too.
Charles, you shouldn't have. But I'm dying to see what it is.
Come here. I've got something for you, too, Charlie.
Oh, I don't want anything. Really, I mean that.
But I want you to have it.
You made us all happy. All of us, all at the same time. And me most of all. That's enough.
I am. To Charlie from Uncle Charlie. Please take it.
I'm so glad Mom named me after you. She thinks we're alike, you know. No, if you gave me anything, that would spoil it.
Then I'll have to open the box for you.
We're not just uncle and niece. We're something special.
Yeah, give me your hand, Charlie.
It's as if we were sort of like twins. I know you. I know there's something inside of you nobody knows.
Something nobody knows?
There's something that's, oh, so secret and wonderful. I'll find it, too.
Oh. Here's a gift, Charlie. Look at your hand now.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Oh, it's a good emerald. A real one.
Here. I'll take the ring off, just this once. I want to hold it against the light. You've had something engraved on it.
What? What did you say?
There's letters. It's awfully faint. To T.S. from B.R.
Charlie, let me have that.
No, I said I'd take it off just this once. Must be somebody's initials. Made somebody else happy, too.
The jeweler cheated me.
It doesn't matter. I like it this way. Just the way I like you. Thank you. Thank you so very much.
I hope it makes you happy. Even happier than the person who wore it before you, whoever she was. Now, isn't dinner ready yet?
Well fed, Uncle Charlie?
Fed to the gunnels.
Then you just sit here. Here's Father's paper. He just went out for some tobacco. Now I've got to help Mother with the dishes. Come on, Ann.
Wait till I finish this chapter.
Oh, never mind. She never takes her nose out of that book.
Uncle Charlie, do you expect me to make conversation?
Oh, not as long as there's an evening paper to read.
I'm glad to see you're a reader. It keeps your brain from getting fat.
Here, Uncle Charlie, to settle your dinner.
Smells alcoholic. Thank you.
Just some wine.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Well, you go ahead and read your paper. If you'd care to have a discussion afterwards, I'll be glad to... Uncle Charlie, you spilled your drink. Uncle Charlie.
What? Oh, the wine.
Are you all right? You don't look good.
It's nothing. I just had an accident.
Here. Some of it got on your paper. I'll take it.
Leave the paper alone.
Well, I was just trying
something
to...
crash.
Oh, Charlie, yeah. I was very clumsy, the glass.
Now, don't go getting all embarrassed. Uh-oh, it's on Father's paper.
It's just this one page. I'll tear it out.
Oh, page 9. He probably won't even know the difference.
Here, I'll throw this part away.
Gee, Charlie, did he ever get sore?
Help me pick up this glass.
He was sore, all right. Well, maybe he was scared. That's what it's like in books. When people get scared, they usually get sore, too.
Yes?
It's me, Charlie. I brought you some water for your night table.
Oh, come in. I was just looking out the window. It's very peaceful, your town.
I'll put it here.
Thank you, Charlie. Pleasant dreams.
Uncle Charlie. I know a secret about you.
You do?
And you don't know I know.
What do you mean?
I know there was something in the evening paper about you.
Go on.
You tore it out when you spilled the wine on it, but you didn't throw it away.
Charlie, that wasn't about me.
Oh, I'll bet you're just being modest. But I'll find out. It's still in your pocket, right here.
Take your hand away.
I just want to...
Take your hand away.
Uncle Charlie. You're hurting me.
Oh, Charlie. Charlie, forgive me. I was just fooling. It's nothing. It's just some ugly gossip about a friend. Not for you to read. I was pretty silly, I guess.
The paper. It was still wet with the wine. It's on my hand.
Oh, I am sorry, Charlie. Forgive me.
Of course. Good night, Uncle Charlie.
And so ends the first act of our Screen Directors Playhouse production of Shadow of a Doubt, starring Betsy Drake and Cary Grant. It's been called everything from the world's best babysitter to a magic carpet. It can turn a furnished room into a palace, a house into a home. You think that's exaggerated talk about television? Well, you ought to see the thousands of fan letters sent in by RCA Victor owners. So many, so very many of them telling how much television itself has meant to them personally, as well as how much they like their RCA Victor sets. I don't know why we waited so long. We'd only known what we were missing, we'd have bought our set long ago. Why not tune yourself and your family into this great new entertainment? Stop in at your RCA Victor dealers tomorrow and get the details. And you may very well find that it will cost you a lot less than you think to own one of the 18 beautiful new RCA Victor television receivers. But tomorrow's the day to do it. Never has any home appliance been in greater demand. And never before such demand for one brand, RCA Victor. Now, back to the second act of the Screen Directors Playhouse production of Shadow of a Doubt,
starring Cary Grant and Betsy Drake.
Voice isn't a part of me anymore. It's in the middle of a vast space, sobbing and screaming.
Can somebody hear me?
My lungs are sucking at the carbon monoxide.
In the garage.
And a nursery rhyme makes a crazy little song.
I'm suffocating.
I think of Uncle Charlie and his hand hard on my wrist, hurting me. You shouldn't be shouting. Uncle Charlie's still asleep.
Well, I was so excited I forgot.
We're celebrities, Charlie.
Are we? Why?
Well, I'm not quite sure myself. But the young man from the survey is in the front room.
Mother, what young man? What survey?
Well, he's being sent around the country by some kind of institute or committee. And he has to pick out average families and ask them questions.
Excuse me for interrupting, but I couldn't help overhearing.
This is my daughter, Charlie.
Charlie?
For Charlotte.
Oh. Oh, my name is Jack Gray, Miss Newton. I'm with the National Public Survey, and I assure you it's perfectly legitimate. And I asked your mother if we could make an analysis of your family, you know, pictures and a few thousand questions. It's all very scientific.
Charlie, dear, don't frown like that.
Well,
I promise, Miss Newton, cross my heart, I'll be hardly any bother.
Oh, Charlie, it's 10:30. I promised your uncle we'd wake him.
I'll do it, Mom. Oh, and nice to have met you, Mr. Graham. Welcome to our household.
Well, thanks, Miss Newton.
Oh, good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Uncle Charlie. You know what?
What?
We're going to be interviewed.
Charlie, I hate newspaper reporters.
Not by newspaper. It's for a survey.
Survey?
What are those things where somebody asks you a lot of questions?
What kind of questions?
I don't know. Mr. Graham knows all about it, though.
Graham? Who's Graham?
The survey man.
Do you know him, Charlie?
No, he's from out of town. Why?
Charlie, now why do you let strangers into your home like this? They're probably picking your family for the All-American Sucker List.
You mean our family? It's perfectly all right.
Survey. Charlie, I wonder why he picked this family.
Just too average for words, I guess.
Can't you get rid of him?
Why? He's rather good looking.
Well, he's going to ask us another stupid question. He can leave me out of it.
Oh, all right, Grumpy. We'll ignore you. Oh, I'll have to put some makeup on. He's going to take pictures.
Pictures? Here?
Yes, he's...
Charlie, get that man out of this house.
Well, Uncle Charlie, there's nothing to get excited about.
I've never been photographed in my life, and I don't want to be.
Oh, yes, you have.
Never, Charlie.
Don't you remember? I've got the picture here. It's somewhere in my drawer. Oh, here it is. Now, do you remember?
Let me see that. I was just a youngster.
Good morning, Charles.
Mom, I was just showing Uncle Charlie his picture.
Oh, let me see it, dear. Oh, I remember that. It was taken the Christmas you got your bicycle, Charles, just before your accident.
What accident?
Your Uncle Charles didn't know how to work the bicycle very well, and he skidded into a streetcar.
Oh, dear.
His skull was fractured. We thought he was going to die.
I'm glad he didn't.
He was laid up for so long. And then afterwards, there was no holding him. Just as if he'd used up all the rest he'd ever need. He was always in mischief after that.
Does it ever bother you, Uncle Charlie?
Well, he used to have terrible headaches.
Do you still have them?
Sometimes, Charlie. Sometimes there's a... What's the use of looking backwards? It's today I worry about.
Well, if it's today you're worried about, you'd better be having your breakfast.
Right.
I want to get the house straightened away for that Mr. Graham... I guess Charlie told you about him.
Yes, she did. Well, Anne, this is the first time I've seen you without a book.
That's because I'm meditating.
Mm-hmm. Well, the front porch is a fine place to meditate.
I guess
guess you've been all over the world, haven't you, Uncle Charlie?
Most of it, Anne. But this is best of all.
Here comes Charlie from the marketing.
Hmm? Who's that with her?
Mrs. Potter. She's a widow.
Hi, Uncle Charlie. I want you to meet a neighbor. Mrs. Potter, this is that man I'm always talking about, Mr. Oakley.
How do you do, Miss Potter?
Oh, it's Mrs. Mr. Oakley. Oh.
Can I help you with those packages?
Oh, would you? I don't use the car since my dear husband went to his reward.
Oh, well, here. A young woman like you should drive a car, Mrs. Potter. Perhaps I can teach you.
Oh, would you, Mr. Oakley? I'd be so grateful.
Well, where do you live?
Oh, it's just down the street.
Well, I better get these packages into the house.
Charlie, don't go in yet. Here comes that man again.
Hello there.
Oh, hello, Mr. Graham. I see you have your camera.
Yeah, ready for work.
Here, Anne, take these bundles.
Oops. I got them.
Now, let's see, Miss Newton. There are five in your family.
Four.
But your mother said five.
Well, she counted my Uncle Charlie. He's just visiting.
Oh, where's he from?
The East.
Is he in business?
Yes.
May I ask what kind?
I don't know, just business. He's pretty well off.
Will I be able to talk to him?
I don't think so. He's not interested in the survey. And he doesn't like to have his picture taken.
Charlie, is that Mr. Graham?
Oh, yes, it is.
Well, please come in.
Well, now, how do we begin?
With a few pictures, I think. We're doing some research on kitchen organization.
Oh, my goodness, I was just baking a cake. Our kitchen's a mess.
Well, that's all right with me.
Well, not with me. I won't have a bunch of total strangers accuse me of having a messy kitchen. I'll clean up first.
You know, Mr. Graham, you picking us as an average family. I'm not sure I like that.
Why not? I'm from a pretty average family myself.
As average as ours?
Averager.
Well, I still don't think I like being an average girl.
I don't think you're average at all.
Why, thank you, Mr. Graham. I'm glad you didn't see me the day before yesterday. I was way down in the dumps. And then Uncle Charlie came.
Oh, is that him coming up the walk now?
That's him. All sunburned and nice.
Please, Miss Newton, if you'll just step away from the camera.
You're not going to take a picture of him.
Just this once, Miss Newton. I'm sure he won't mind.
Hello, Charlie. I don't like to be photographed. I'm afraid I'll have to ask you for that plate.
I told him, Uncle Charlie. This is Mr. Graham from the survey.
I assume that. The plate, please, Mr. Graham.
Here it is.
Thank you. No hard feelings, I hope, Mr. Graham.
No hard feelings.
Mr. Graham, I'm ready for you now.
Oh, Mrs. Newton, I'm sorry, but I just remembered I have an appointment with the mayor. A research business. But I have a favor to ask you before I call again.
Why, of course, Mr. Graham.
Could I borrow your daughter for this evening, just to show me around town?
Well, which one? Charlie or Anne?
I mean, Charlie.
Well, if Charlie doesn't mind.
Does Charlie mind?
No, Charlie doesn't mind.
Fine. Pick you up at 6:30?
If you're through talking to the mayor by then.
Yeah, I'll be through.
This is it. The Grand Tour.
Oh, it's a delightful town. But my feet are tired.
They call this park the square.
Then why is it built like a circle? Oh, well, I'll try. Come on, Charlie, let's sit down. Once upon a time, Charlie, I'll bet you smiled. Don't you like to smile anymore?
Jack, when we started out tonight, I hoped you'd tell me.
Tell you what?
This is a small town, small enough so that a lot of us know the mayor.
That's nice.
There was a little ache in the back of my mind about this survey business of yours. My Uncle Charlie thought it was strange.
I see.
So when you said you had an appointment with the mayor, I phoned his office.
Never heard of me.
No. So you were lying. I don't like lies.
Well, I'm found out.
Why did you do it? What do you want from us?
I had my reasons.
Perhaps the police would be interested in your reasons.
I wouldn't go to the police if I were you, Charlie.
Why not?
Because I'm a policeman.
You? For heaven's sakes, what do you want at our house?
Charlie, I came here from the East to find a man. He's very dangerous.
Well, what has that got to do with us?
Think, Charlie, how much do you know about your Uncle Charlie?
He's my mother's brother. Well, what's he got to do with this?
He might be the man we're looking for.
Uncle Charlie?
I never heard of anything so ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous. It's a strong possibility. There's another fellow in the East, another suspect. The police are hunting for him now. He might be the guy. And then again, it might be your uncle.
How can you say a thing like that? What reason do you have?
I followed your uncle out here. I followed him from...
Followed him? Do you know what kind of a man he is? How can you possibly suspect him of anything?
I suspect him. I have my reasons. For your sake, I hope I'm wrong. I could be. I don't even know what the man I'm searching for looks like. As far as we know, he's never had a photograph taken. There's a chance your uncle is our man, Charlie. A good chance.
If it were true, he'd be arrested.
Yes, he would.
My mother. It would kill her. No, it can't be. There must be some mistake.
No mistake, Charlie. And I promise you this. If your Uncle Charlie is the guilty man, I'll get him out of town quietly.
He isn't guilty. I know he isn't.
But you'll have to help me. Give me your word you'll help me get him out of town, Charlie.
It's going to be so funny when you find out that you're wrong.
Charlie. Charlie, come back.
Why, Charlie.
Mrs. Potter, do you have last night's newspaper?
Why, yes, of course.
May I see it, please?
Well, of course. Can I get you some tea?
No, nothing. Just the paper.
Why, it's right over here, dear, on the couch. Oh, it was so gracious of your uncle to help me today. My, but he's a...
The paper, Mrs. Potter.
Oh, yes, here you are, dear. You know, I don't believe a single man has been in this house for years. Oh, and charming. Oh, my goodness.
I wasn't hearing Mrs. Potter anymore, and my own voice was echoing in my mind, echoing cold and lonely and afraid. Killer escapes. Nationwide search underway for strangler of three rich women. The whereabouts of the so-called Merry Widow murderer is still unknown today. Escaping from a police net drawn tightly about the northeastern states, the killer is still at large. The most recent of his three victims, all of them wealthy widows, was Mrs. Bruce Rogers, the former Thelma Shenley.
Charlie, what is it?
Thelma Shenley. Bruce Rogers. To T.S. from B.R. The ring. The ring.
Hickory, dickory, dock.
Are you,
Charlie? Are you?
The third act of the Screen Director's Playhouse presentation of Shadow of a Doubt continues in just a minute. Here is something you should know if you ever suffer from the pain of headache, neuritis, or neuralgia. It's an incredibly fast way to ease the pain. It's Anacin, a way countless numbers of people have found superior. Anacin acts so promptly to relieve pain. Anacin is like a doctor's prescription. That is, Anacin contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven active ingredients in convenient tablet form. Thousands of persons have been introduced to Anacin through their own physicians or dentists. But today these tablets are in such widespread use that all drug counters have them and everyone can have the benefit of their incredibly fast action. So if you want to relieve the pains of a headache, neuritis, or neuralgia, by all means try Anacin. On this guarantee, if the first few Anacin tablets do not give you all the relief you want as fast as you want it, return the unused portion and your money will be refunded. I'll spell the name for you. A-N-A-C-I-N. Easy-to-take Anacin tablets come in handy boxes of 12 and 30 and economical family-size bottles of 50 and 100. Ask for Anacin at your druggist's today. Listening to the Screen Director's Playhouse, one of five great radio shows that are brought to you five nights a week by RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music,
first in television, and by the Whitehall Pharmacal Company, makers of Anacin, Carlinos, Bisodol, and other fine drug products. The Screen Director's Playhouse presentation of Shadow of a Doubt, starring Betsy Drake and Cary Grant, will continue after a short pause for station identification. Stay tuned to your local station on NBC. Now for the third act of the Screen Director's Playhouse production of Shadow of a Doubt, starring Cary Grant as Uncle Charlie and Betsy Drake as Charlie.
I know that this garage will be my place of dying. I can't hear the cries for help anymore, or the pounding on the door. And that's because I, Charlie Newton, have ceased to move. The gas, the exhaust poison from the automobile, is heavy and warm. There are two pains. One is in my right ankle, a hot pain, and I know I must have sprained it in my struggle for escape. The other pain is here, inside me. It's the pain that comes when love goes away.
Dickory, Dickory, Dock.
It was the second night of Uncle Charlie's visit when I read the newspaper story. The Merry Widow murderer, the three-time slayer of women, Uncle Charlie. You'd think I wouldn't be able to sleep that night, but I did sleep. A drugged flight into fantasy. And I slept through the night and throughout most of the next day. Slept and dreamed.
You've always been my favorite, you know.
That's why Mother gave me your name.
Why, you're just a little girl again.
No, I'm not. I'm grown. I'm grown up, and I know who you are.
I liked you better as a little girl, Charlie.
Hickory dickory dock.
The mouse ran up the clock.
There was blood on your hand.
One.
It was only wine.
Blood.
From the newspaper.
Blood.
The clock struck one.
And down he run.
Hickory dickory.
You killed them, Uncle Charlie.
Just a mouse.
Three women.
It was only a mouse.
I loved you and you're a murderer.
Oh, you mustn't, Charlie. You mustn't. Please, Charlie. You mustn't. Charlie, don't cry. Wake up. Charlie.
What? Who is it?
It's Uncle Charlie. I heard you crying.
Oh.
Oh, were you having a nightmare?
Yes. Did I? Say anything?
No, just cried. Your forehead is damp.
Please, don't touch me.
Why, what's wrong?
It's nothing.
But you act as if you're afraid of me. Why should you be afraid?
It was the dream.
You shouldn't have bad dreams. Not you, Charlie. Not you, of all people.
I'll be all right now.
Will you?
Yes. I'll be all right.
Then good night, young Charlie. Good night.
Charlie. Charlie.
Hmm? Oh, good morning, Pops.
It's not morning. It's dinner time. You slept all through the day. Your mother told me to wake you up.
Tell her I'll be right down.
And you consume more energy reading books than anybody I ever knew. Here.
You aren't eating, Charlie. Not hungry?
I guess it's just too much sleep. and dreaming a perfect nightmare.
Why, what about, dear?
Uncle Charlie. It was all mixed up with blood and killing.
Charlotte!
You were on a train, Uncle Charlie, and I felt you were running away from something.
Charlotte, I insist that you...
When I saw you on the train, I felt terribly happy and...
Go on.
Why, that's all.
Just imagine such nightmares about your uncle. How could you feel happy with him going away?
I was just telling you the dream, Mother.
I don't want you to leave ever, Charles. This is your home. I want it to be your home. You were gone for so many years. Now that we're together again, I don't want you to leave ever. Please, Charles. Please don't go away. You won't, will you?
Do you want me to stay, Charlie?
I want my family to be happy.
Then I won't go. Not for a while. If it's all right with you, Joe.
Of course it is.
Thank you, Charles. Thank you. Hey, drink your milk, Anne.
Oh.
You heard your mother.
Oh, Charles, I almost forgot. I promised our women's club that you'd talk to the ladies. You know, just a little speech at our meeting tomorrow night.
Really? What am I going to talk about?
You know so many things, Uncle Charlie. So many strange things. That shouldn't be hard.
What sort of an audience would they be, Emmy?
Oh, women like myself, busy with our homes.
Yes. Women keep busy in towns like this. In the cities, it's different. Cities are full of women. Idle, middle-aged widows. Husbands dead. Husbands who spent their lives making money to give to their useless wives.
Uncle Charlie.
And then the husbands die. And then what do, these useless women? You see them in the hotels, the best hotels, drinking the money, eating the money, smelling of money. Horrible, fat, faded, greedy women. Useless, pointless. They shouldn't even be allowed to exist. They give nothing and they take everything.
But they're alive. They're human beings.
Are they, Charlie? Are they human or just fat, wheezing animals? And what happens to animals when they get too fat and too old?
Well, for heaven's sake, Charles. Don't go talking like that in front of the women's club. Why, the idea. They'd run us out of town.
Yeah. Well, we couldn't have that, could we?
Oh, Charles, that nice Mrs. Potter is going to be there, too. She was asking me about you, you know.
That nice Mrs. Potter.
Why, Charlie.
I'm sorry, Mother. Father, I'm going outside. I can't stand it in here.
What's wrong with her?
Maybe she's in love with that Mr. Graham, the survey man.
Anne, you go after
her.
No,
I'll go. You finish your dinner. Charlie, I want to talk to you.
You're hurting my arm.
I said I want to talk to you. You're going here.
No.
It's just a cocktail bar. Sit down here. A ginger ale and a brandy, please.
Why did you bring me here?
Oh, now, Charlie. What's wrong? What's come between us? Look, we're not just uncle and niece. You said so yourself. We're more like twins. Charlie, that man... That Jack Graham, what did he tell you?
He's got nothing to do with it. He didn't tell me anything. And I told him nothing.
What could you have told him?
What you are. Uncle Charlie, how could you? How could you do things like that?
Like what?
You're my mother's brother. I loved you because I thought you were more worthy of love than anybody in the whole world.
Charlie, what do you know?
Take your ring back. To T.S. from B.R., to Thelma Shenley from Bruce Rogers. I'm sorry it ever touched my skin.
Oh, sit down. Sit down, Charlie. You want to run home. Run to your safe little nest. Run away from me and everything I stand for. Well, what do I stand for?
Do you want me to tell you? Do you want me to say the word?
You can't. Because you don't understand. You don't know. There's so much you don't know. You think you're the clever little girl, but you're an ordinary little girl in an ordinary little town. You're safe and secure from everything except stupid dreams
And I brought you those, didn't I?
I didn't even know there were men like you in the world.
How do you know what the world is like? Do you know that the world is a foul sty? Do you know if you ripped the fronts off houses, you'd find swine? The world is a hell. What does it matter? What happens in it?
You're sick, Uncle Charlie. You're really sick.
Wake up, Charlie. Use your wits. Learn something.
I've learned enough to... If my mother knew, it would kill her.
Then, if you love your mother... Let's go, Charlie. Charlie, it's been a shock. Let it wear off.
Here's the house. I want to go in now.
Just a minute. Listen, Charlie. The same blood flows through our veins, yours and mine. You've got to understand. Before I came here, I was the end of my rope.
Yet you came here to this house reeking
of... Don't say that, Charlie.
You'll do it again. That Mrs. Potter. I know what you've been
thinking. Never again. Oh, I'm so tired. There's an end to the running a man can do. You'll never know what it's like to be so tired.
I hope I never do.
This is my last chance, Charlie. Give it to me. Graham doesn't know. Not for sure. There's a man in the East. If they get him, I'll be able to forget.
Just get out of our house.
I will. Only give me a few days. Think of your mother.
She's the only one I am thinking of. Take your few days. Take them and then get out.
All right. No matter what I've done, you know yourself, we're something special. Thank you, Charlie.
Hey there, Charlie.
Who is it? Oh, Jack.
You're still angry with me?
No.
Oh, you've been crying.
No, it's just... No.
Like to go for a ride with a cop, Charlie?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Still broken up about last night?
You don't get over it fast. Not a thing like that.
Is there anything you can tell me? Anything about your uncle?
No. Have you found out anything else?
Well, they're still working in the East on the other suspect. But you've got to understand, Charlie, you may be living in the same house with a killer, a ruthless murderer.
Uncle Charlie.
I'm sorry, really sorry.
Jack, I'm trying to do what you said.
About getting him out of town? Oh, that's the best way. Then you can be sure.
I think he's going to leave.
You'll let me know when?
Yes, I'll let you know. That's our bargain, isn't it? I'll let you know and you won't arrest him here.
It has to be that way, Charlie. Until we know for sure, you won't be safe. Not you or any of your family.
My mother... She won't know why he's leaving. She wants him to stay more than anything else in the world.
This way, she'll never know. Wouldn't you want it like that?
Yes. It's so strange. From the time you're a little girl, you love somebody. And then suddenly...
Oh, Charlie. Charlie. Come here.
I loved him. I loved him so much.
Charlie, you seem pretty sure he's the man we want.
No. I'm just scared, that's all. I'm scared.
If he gets away from us, he'll go on.
Jack, please.
I'm sorry, but my job...
I know. I'm so tired. I slept for almost 24 hours, but I'm so tired.
Shall I take you home now?
Yes, please. Take me home, Jack. To my home. I'm in the kitchen, Mom, doing the dishes.
Charlie, that young man, Mr. Graham, he's on the porch.
Is he?
Awfully early to come calling. But I guess he wants to ask you some questions in connection with the survey.
All right, Mom.
Oh, look at that. Your uncle didn't even finish his orange juice. Don't you go bothering him now. He's preparing his speech for tonight.
Oh, that woman's club.
My, they'll be so impressed.
Charlie?
What do you want?
I was up early this morning. I listened to the news on the radio.
I'm sorry, I'm not interested.
Good news, Charlie. Your young man, I expect he's waiting out there to tell you about it.
Leave me alone.
Oh, nothing to worry about, Charlie.
Charlie, I've got something to tell you.
About him?
Where can we be alone?
Oh, the garage is all right. What is it?
I'm going away. I'm leaving Santa Rosa.
Does that mean...
It means I've been taken off the job. Your uncle is clear. How does that sound?
Clear?
The other man, the one in the east. It's already in the news. They got him, the Merry Widow murderer.
Did he confess?
He's dead.
Oh. Look out for your clothes. There's a lot of grease in the garage.
Charlie, you're taking it mighty calmly.
Sometimes I'm like that, when I'm surprised.
It happened in Maine, Portland. He was running away from the police at the airport. He ran into the propeller of an airplane and cut him to pieces.
Dreadful.
Dreadful? The murderer is dead. He won't kill anymore. As long as he was free, he'd have killed again and again. That's the kind of person he was. I haven't told you about him, Charlie, because... Well, I wanted to spare you that when your uncle was a suspect. But he married women for their money, old women, widows. And then he murdered them.
It's done with, Jack. Don't talk about it.
Charlie, if you knew for sure it was your uncle, what would you have done?
I think I would have tried to keep it a secret from everyone. Even from you, Jack. I would have forced him to go away.
Well, then it's a good thing your uncle isn't the Merry Widow murderer. If you had done that, threatened him, he probably would have killed you too, you know.
No. I don't think so.
Why not?
Because I don't think he'd do that. We've been too close to each other. He would have gone away.
Oh, well, it's all ended happily, hasn't it? Except that I'm the one who's going away.
Will it be soon?
Yeah, right now, right away. I just stopped off to see you.
Do you think you'll be coming back?
I hope so.
So do I. Oh, look, there's Mother's glove on the garage floor. She's always losing something.
And someday she'll be losing you. You'll be getting married to a clerk or a doctor or a policeman.
Funny. I hadn't thought about getting married.
What's that?
Oh, that's the garage door. Guess there's a breeze.
Oh. I'm glad we met, Charlie. And I'm sorry it was like this, with fear and worry.
It's all over now.
I suppose it couldn't ever really happen that someday you'd tell your father, you know, about marrying someone. The detective, I mean.
I don't know. I just don't know, Jack.
I love you, Charlie. I know it's no time to tell you now. Do you mind?
I don't mind.
And you?
I'd like us to be friends. We are friends.
Nothing more?
Maybe. I need time to think.
Shall I come back, Charlie?
Oh, yes. Please come back.
Look, Charlie, think about it. Perhaps it won't take you too long. I'm stopping in San Francisco for a few days. I'll be at the St. Francis if you want
me to... The St. Francis. I'll remember. Oh, that darn garage door. It's always slamming shut. Open it.
Well, here. Let me try.
There. Well, what are you two locking yourselves in the garage for?
Hello, Mr. Oakley. I was just saying goodbye to your niece.
Leaving us?
Yes, I'm all finished here, so I'll say goodbye to you, too.
Well, let's do it right here on the lawn. No use taking chances on the garage again, huh?
Right. But I'll be back. Not business, but I'll be back.
Oh? Oh, Charlie, is it? She's a fine girl, this one. The thing I love most in all the world.
Are you driving, Jack?
Oh, yes. I better get started.
Still no hard feelings about the picture.
Forgotten.
Good. Rights of man, you know. Freedom.
We'll have a talk about freedom someday, Mr. Oakley. Don't forget me, Charlie.
I won't.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Jack!
He can't hear you, Charlie.
When are you leaving?
Oh, Charlie, that other business is all over.
I asked when you were leaving.
I'd like to forget all that. We're happy here.
You can't stay.
But I'm going to, you see. I like it here. This is what I want. A new life. People who know me and respect me. I can be so very happy here, Charlie.
I'll expose you if you try to stay.
No, Charlie. What would that do to your mother? No. And who'd believe you? A silly little girl babbling about a newspaper clipping in a ring you don't even have anymore.
You have it.
Me? I gave it to you. I've got to stay. Understand that, Charlie. I'm going to stay.
I don't want you here, Uncle Charlie. I'm warning you. Go away, or I'll kill you myself.
Think I'll pass muster at the women's club, huh?
Oh, you look very handsome, Charles. And so does Joe.
Emmy, I'll never know why you have to soak my handkerchiefs in lavender.
I'll be waiting outside, Mommy.
All right, dear. Oh, I'm so proud of my two men. Oh, here you are, Charlie.
I'm ready, Mother.
To have your speech, Charles.
Yep, polished to perfection.
Oh, then we're all ready. But I don't know how we'll manage in the coupe.
Oh, now, don't you worry about that. I've already phoned for a taxi. Charlie and I can go in your car, and the rest of you take the cab.
Now, Charles.
Oh, it's all arranged. Right, Charlie?
Why don't you go in the cab?
Well, I'd like you to hear my speech. Don't you want to help?
Mother, I want you to come with us in the car.
But, Charlie...
Why don't you go out and start the car, Charlie?
Please, Mother, I want you to come in the car. To the garage and opened the doors. The car motor was running and the exhaust was a strangling cloud. I tried to turn the motor off, but the car doors were locked. I began to cough, and as I turned to leave the garage, the door slammed tight. Please, can somebody hear me? Suffocating. Oh, please, please. Mother. Father. Uncle Charlie, Uncle Charlie.
Dickory, Dickory, Dock.
And now I'm dying. It's like a deep, smooth syrup all around me. The concrete floor of the garage isn't hard anymore. It's soft. Soft. Like a bed. Like my bed. Charlie. Charlie. Mom? Oh, thank God. Thank God. Joe. Charles, she's conscious. She's all right.
Charlie, we were so frightened.
Oh, yes, young Charlie, you couldn't leave us, could you?
My room. I was in the garage. I couldn't get out.
The door was jammed, dear. Your Uncle Charlie opened it.
Uncle Charlie? Did he hear me in there?
No, dear. I did.
You're lucky your father had such sharp ears.
Get away from me.
We haven't even had time to call Dr. Phillips. I'm going to...
No, Mother. I'm all right. I'll get up. Oh.
What is it, Charlie?
My ankle. I must have sprained it trying to get out of the garage.
Your mother will call Dr. Phillips and he'll...
No, Pops. My ankle will be all right tomorrow. And now, I'm just tired. I want to rest. Besides, you've still got the women's club.
We couldn't leave you now, dear.
Of course not, Charlie.
I insist. It'll mean so much to Mother. I'm all right now. Honest I am.
I don't know.
Is that what you want, Charlie?
That's what I want. Oh, please, please, hurry, oh, please. Yes?
Miss Newton?
Yes, this is Miss Newton.
On your call to the St. Francis in San Francisco, Mr. Jack Graham is not in the hotel. It is known when he'll return.
Don't they have any idea?
I'm sorry, miss.
Well, please leave a message for him to phone Miss Charlotte Newton in Santa Rosa. It's very important.
Very well.
Thank you.
Too bad, Charlie.
Uncle Charlie.
Well, he isn't in, is he?
What are you doing here? You should be at the...
The woman's club? Well, the family's there. And I forgot the notes for my speech.
Take them and leave me alone.
No, Charlie. I won't leave you alone. Oh, no, I can't. Not with you knowing what you know. You see, I've got to stay here, Charlie. Everything I want is right here. But I can't stay, can I, as long as you want me to leave? You've threatened me and forced me, and I can't have that, Charlie.
Huh?
Now, don't try to run away. You can't, your ankle.
No,
don't scream. I don't want you to scream. Not my Charlie. I want you to understand. You're a smart girl, Charlie. The garage this afternoon, well, that failed, and now we have to do it this way. Oh, I've suffered so much, Charlie. That's why I can't bear to hear you cry. You won't cry, will you? Because there won't be anybody to hear you, and all the neighbors are at the woman's club. Now, Charlie, let me lift you up.
What? What are you going to do?
You must understand something. You see, I love you. You were my delight, Charlie. My favorite niece, and I was proud of you. Now I have to do this, and I want to hold you gently so I won't hurt you. You weigh hardly anything.
Uncle Charlie, please, please.
See, no. Look, we're at the top of the stairs. I'll drop you over the railing. And if you're not dead, Charlie, I'll do it again and again until you are dead. And then I can stay here. And you won't be able to hurt me anymore. I never wanted to hurt you, Charlie, never.
No, I won't.
Oh, don't fight, Charlie. Oh, please, don't struggle.
There.
Don't.
Oh, my eyes, your fingers, my eyes, Charlie!
Who is this?
Jack?
Yes, did you call me? What is it? What's wrong, Charlie?
Please, come back. I need you.
Is it your uncle?
He's dead. I think he's dead. He was the one.
How did it happen? Is your mother there?
No. She doesn't know. She'll never know. She'll think it was all an accident. Please, Jack, hurry. Mother, a terrible thing has happened. A terrible thing.
So ends our Screen Directors Playhouse presentation of Shadow of a Doubt, and two fine performances by Betsy Drake and Cary Grant. Next week, the Screen Directors Playhouse is privileged to adapt a motion picture distinguished by one of the rare screen performances of a most unusual actress. The story, for the first time on the air, is Alfred Hitchcock's remarkable Lifeboat. And recreating her original role will be Tallulah Bankhead. And co-starring with her will be one of Hollywood's most swiftly rising young stars, the popular Jeff Chandler. Shadow of a Doubt was presented through the courtesy of Universal International Pictures, now releasing The Milkman, starring Donald O'Connor and Jimmy Durante. Betsy Drake may currently be seen in the Warner Brothers comedy Pretty Baby. Included in tonight's cast were High Averback, Lois Corbett, Ann Whitfield, Gail Bonney, and Earl Ross. Shadow of a Doubt was adapted for radio by Richard Allen Simmons. The Screen Director's Playhouse is directed by Bill Karn and produced by Howard Wiley. This is James Wallington speaking and inviting you to listen again next Thursday night when we present
Screen Director's Playhouse, stars Tallulah Bankhead, Jeff Chandler, production Lifeboat, director Alfred Hitchcock.
Listen again next week to Screen Director's Playhouse, the Thursday night feature on NBC's five-show festival of comedy, music, mystery, and drama. Listen tomorrow evening to the one and only Duffy Stafford, the Friday night feature of the five-show festival.
That wonderful show, Duffy's Tavern, returns tomorrow on NBC.
Well, folks, that was The Screen Director's Playhouse and Shadow of a Doubt, aired on November the 9th, 1950. I hope you enjoyed both these presentations, and I hope you have a happy Halloween. Sure, there's a few more days to go, I would suppose about a week and a couple days, but you can start celebrating it now. Peace out, everyone, and have a great weekend and evening. Bye for now.